so this will self-destruct in T minus 60 minutes, I think. I'm Sia, and I'm an alcoholic. And, gee, it's wonderful to be here. I have been out here once before, and I want to thank John for inviting me back, and want to thank you all for being here. I'm an alcoholic, too. I'm from Los Angeles. The Pacific Group says hello, and I think we can say we send our respect, because Alcoholics Anonymous is so alive and well here, and I need that, too, and that's what I'm doing here tonight. I'm here to try to carry the message that I received. You know, there's a lot of messages, but what was the message you received, Sia? And this group reminds me of what you've done for me, and I don't know if there's any newer people here, but I want to welcome you, and if there's somebody here who's not feeling so good, I've been in meetings and not felt so good myself. And Alcoholics Anonymous is the place that keeps me moving forward, keeps on working for me, and I'm just really grateful to be here, and it was great to see Liz and Noam, know them from back in the Pacific Group. So it's a small world. It's a sober world, and it's a wonderful small world. So my sobriety date is January 30th, 1983, and I have a sponsor. She knows she is my sponsor. And I am trying to do what you taught me to do when I first came into AA in this sobriety. And I remember when I came into AA, those guys, Bill and Bob, they just looked like these old codgers, you know. And the more I hang around here, the younger those guys look every day. I don't know what happened to anybody else around here, but it's kind of a funny thing. And I had a good flight out here because I kind of know you, and I was excited. And I feel good tonight. I feel real sober tonight. I feel peaceful tonight. I don't always feel peaceful when I speak. I get nervous, and that's just self-centeredness and my ego, and there it is. But I do it anyway, and that's what you taught me. You said, we don't care how you feel. If you take these actions, it will work. That's a spiritual principle of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new here and you feel like you can't do it, you probably can't. But if you do it, somehow the momentum in Alcoholics Anonymous, this thing we call a higher power, whatever that means to any of us, he or she or it, Alcoholics Anonymous has so much latitude, because basically what we want you to do is live. That's what you want me to do, and that's what I want you to do. And so I'm going to take the time to kind of frame my story around the classic AA format, what I used to be like, what has happened to me, and what I'm like now. And what I used to be like was a pretty unhappy person. I just seemed to have been born that way, and I don't know why exactly that is. There are things I can tell you about my life as a kid that maybe were unhappy, but that's not what made me alcoholic. I'm going to talk a little bit about the spiritual malady, because I had spiritual malady before I started drinking. I think fundamentally what happened in my life, and this is in retrospect looking back at my life and being in AA, I think fundamentally I never identified any place that I was. This is a term we use in AA if you're new. I used to say I didn't feel a part of, and that was true, but at some point I realized I think normal people identify in normal places, if you want to use that language, and I did not identify in those places. I did not identify in my own family. My family are real nice looking people, and I was this tall, skinny thing with buck teeth and scraggly hair. That's a direct quote from a police report. So. Funny to you. And I didn't appreciate it. And my response to not feeling a part of, not identifying, was anger. I'm a very angry person. And I'm a person who not only overdrinks, I overmarry, I overlike people who underlike me. I just can't quite get that right, you know. And one of the people that I was overmarried to said to me one time, you know, I actually think you are the angriest person that I have ever met. To which I replied, that makes me angry. I have limited skills, limited, and I'm a very predictable person without a program. You can pretty much set your watch to the fact that I will drink again. And so I had that going against me, my anger. I was very angry. And I went to kindergarten, and things got worse, you know. I don't know about you guys, but I think as a human being, maybe I peaked at 5. Because what happened in kindergarten, there's these things in kindergarten called people. You know, and what are they for? And they were looking at me like, you're looking at me. And for some reason, I guess I became like a mind reader in kindergarten. Because I felt I knew what they were thinking, and it wasn't good. I was certain it wasn't good. And there were like too many of them to kill, you know. And I felt very trapped. I'm a person who can feel very trapped without a spiritual program, apparently. And so kindergarten didn't work out for me. And then I got involved in what I consider to be somewhat militaristic youth group. You would know them as Girl Scouts. Girl Scouts and I, that just didn't work out either. I am a person, I have certain tendencies as a human being without a program. I am a person who doesn't follow the rules. I color outside the lines. And I'm not really that interested in how you might feel about that. And AA is not the first place I ran into that has traditions. You know, a lot of organizations have traditions. And I didn't really respect those. And I think Girl Scouts kind of went along with it for a while. But when they started to notice I was doing something funny with their cookie money, this changed the picture. They take that pretty seriously in Girl Scouts, it turns out, just for your information. And, you know, I met a former CEO of Girl Scouts in AA a few years ago. And, you know, I felt kind of vindicated because I thought, see, Girl Scouts makes you drink. You know? I knew it, right? And I'm just kidding around, you know. I'm not here to defame Girl Scouts, obviously. What I was taught in Alcoholics Anonymous is I do not talk badly about any religion or organization. And the reason for that is if somebody in here, for example, had a great experience in Girl Scouts, and my putting Girl Scouts down or religion down puts them off, you know, I've just participated in them not having a chance to recover. And so I'm saying this in a lighthearted way. But I had a difficult time fitting in, is my point. And when Girl Scouts noticed I was doing this, there was a meeting. I took some heat for this. And the upshot was that I could no longer be a Girl Scout. Okay, big deal. But here's the thing. There's a thing in the book that says that it's the beginning of a fatal progression. Now, that's talking about our drinking. But they could have applied that to the way that I interact with life. Because somebody could have said to me that day, you know, from here on in, pretty much every organization that you become a part of is going to uninvite you to participate. And that would have been true. I have an inability to have a true partnership with other human beings, as friends, as an employee, as a member of a family. I cannot seem to do that well. And the evidence of that is the story that I brought into Alcoholics Anonymous. And you helped make it a different story. And that's very touching to me, because I didn't know how to do that. You know, I don't know how not to lie. Alcoholics Anonymous does. I don't know how to stop drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous does. I don't know how to be a part of in my family. Alcoholics Anonymous does. I don't know how to do so many things. And Alcoholics Anonymous does. And you have given me that ability in so many ways, I can't trace it to the point. But I did the things this group does. You know, when I came to AA, I was desperate. And I started doing the things you told me to do, taking the actions I didn't believe in. But I didn't believe in anything. So why don't you row towards shore? You know, and that's what you taught me to do. So I grew up in a particular religion. And I didn't identify with that religion. And I say that to you because I think if you identify with this religion or any religion, you're not going to pull the fire alarm during communion, you know. And that is what I did. And I didn't act alone, you know, but I participated in that. And I think if my mother had not gotten between me and the Monsignor, maybe you would have a different speaker, you know. It's just, so none of that went well. When I was 17 or 18, I took my first drink. And I took this drink with some, I was afraid of it. The reason that I was afraid of it was because I grew up in a home where drinking was a problem for my father. And my father's drinking is not why I'm an alcoholic. But we say in AA, alcoholism is a family illness, and it has an effect on people. You know, I remember going to church, and I remember praying as a kid to the God of my understanding. But what I didn't understand until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous is that the God of my understanding truly was that alcoholic who lived in my home. For some reason, with the alcoholic dynamic, I became convinced that my father could help me. I did not understand that alcoholism was the reason that my family was the way it was. My father drank, but my mother kind of went crazy, and I wanted out of that. And alcoholism is, I don't know, it's a no-fault accident. Have you ever had a no-fault accident? It doesn't feel like no-fault. You know, somebody's to blame. and yet alcoholism is an illness. And my father wasn't to blame, and I wasn't to blame. You know, nobody was to blame. Alcoholism is to blame. And when I came into AA, I didn't know that until I came here. And I hated my parents when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is something that you helped divest me of, because there are things an alcoholic cannot carry successfully and stay sober, this alcoholic anyway. And so when I was 17 or 18, I had this drink, and it was no big deal. It was in a local college watering hole. I was a little bit underage, and so I was kind of nervous. And then there were those things called people in the bar, and there was smoke and music, you know, and it was the beer. And I don't know exactly when this occurred. I don't know if it was the first sip of this beer, or the middle of the glass, or the bottom of the glass, or the bottom of the evening. I don't know. But somewhere along the line, something happened to me, and AA calls it the effect produced. And I was afraid of a drink, because what I had seen in my home before I had the big book, before I had the language we have here, I saw powerlessness. I saw it in my father. My father was a big human being, powerful man. My father was 6'7". It makes no difference with an alcoholic. It's an equal opportunity illness. It doesn't care how big you are, how rich you are, how poor you are. It doesn't matter what culture you're from. There it is. And I lived with my father. And what happened with my father with his drinking, with his alcoholism, is he lost most of his material possessions. Alcoholism is progressive. It progressed in my father. And the family goes down with the alcoholic. And I lived with my father. I knew he did not want that to happen, but he could not seem to keep that from happening. And my father also lost his place in our community, because that's what happens with alcoholism. And I know my father did not want that to happen, but my father could not seem to keep that from happening. And so inch by inch, this happened to him. And it was because of that I was afraid of alcohol. And I took this drink, and as I said, I don't know at what point in the evening this thing happened called the effect produced by alcohol. It isn't getting drunk. Anybody who drinks too much gets drunk. That is an outcome. But it is something else in my case. And what it is this problem that I had had all of my life of not fitting in, not having a place. Where is mine? Why do they look so comfortable? What's going on here? Who do I talk to? What can I say? That feeling, that thing that eats you from the inside out, alcoholism, it's carnivorous. And just that evening, something happened, and that was off the table. That wasn't a problem. That was the vacation. And so that was the effect produced for me. What I'm going to tell you is, when something like that happens for a person who has a problem like I had, I'm going to seek that out as often as I can. And so I began to drink as often as I could. And I grew up in Montana, and we have reservations there. And I began to take geographics because on the reservations, people didn't know my family and they could not call them about my behavior. I don't know what you're like when you drink, but I'm an unpredictable person. I can be violent. I can be silly. I can be inappropriate. I can take my clothing off at your wedding reception. I promise not to do that tonight. Fear not. But you know, I get overexcited one way or the other, and it usually doesn't work out. And again, I'm so predictable that way. And so that was one reason that I drank on the reservations. And the other reason that I drank on the reservations, which I did not know until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and did these steps with you, specifically the inventories. You know, these to me, they're like spiritual forensics. I don't know what you felt like when you came here. I felt like a crime scene. and you go through these inventories, and you just get a simple look at yourself, black and white, you know, just the facts. And you see who you are. And I did not understand that the reason that I drank in these places with people who were very different from me is it gave me a tangible reason why I felt so separate from people, so different from people. And I had many things that drove me like that. It was alcoholism that drove me like that. And what you taught me in AA is, see, alcoholism is a reason, but it is not an excuse. You're in AA now. You have the opportunity to work this program, which has worked on the first 100, and it's working on us, you know, so this is your choice. And I started having something happen to me called assisted geographics. I named it because it started happening quite a bit. Apparently it happened to you. You know, this is where people start helping you pack before you're ready to leave. We're among friends, right? And the significant person that helped me in this fashion was my own mother. When I drink, I think what happens to me when I drink is actually I feel hope. And when life feels bleak, like it felt to me, and you feel hope, I don't know about you, but I want to chase that feeling to the end of the line, you know? And I'll stay out all night, is typical. And I came home from staying out all night, and one of my brothers took me to task for arriving at that hour. And I don't know about you, but I don't take that from anybody. Maybe that's our defiance. You know, I'll kill you. I'll kill your whole family. You know, even if you are my family. And like I could, right? But I just go there. And so my brother and I got in a fist fight. And my mother got caught between us. And it was too much for her. One of the reasons it was too much for my mother is at this time my parents had separated. And my mother had some problems. And as a self-centered person, I don't know how that translates for you, but as a self-centered person, if I don't have a program, if there's a problem on the table, unless it has immediate impact on me, if it's not my bedroom that's burning up, I'm really not interested, you know? And it didn't occur to me that maybe my mother felt like her life was over. You know, she has these kids in the house, there's financial problems, my father has this problem, now she's a single parent. And then there's me. And, you know, it says a lot of things about us in the book. One thing it says is we're problem people. We're unlovely in our cups. And so it was just too much. And my mom had to ask me to leave. And so now I'm on a geographic again. And this time I'm in Beverly Hills. And I said to myself I was drinking in Beverly Hills because it sounded good to me. I don't know when you started doing this. It's that thing in the book, whistling in the dark, you know that expression. And things had started to bother me, apparently, about my drinking so that I started dressing it up to myself to feel better about it, to rationalize it, I guess. And so I said I was drinking in Beverly Hills because I thought that sounded good. And the truth of the matter is, I probably drank in Beverly Hills for like 5 minutes, you know, at the bus stop and on my way to hell or wherever I was headed, you know. And I ended up drinking at a place way down in Los Angeles, past Western, if you know Los Angeles, way down past Western, at a bar. It was called The Good Night. It wasn't. I wouldn't look it up. It was not. It was a rough bar and should have been called Rough Bar. And I drank in that bar for the same reason that I drank on the reservations. The people in that bar looked significantly different than me, and it made me feel less weird about feeling different from people. And unfortunately, when young women drink in rough bars, sometimes things happen. And what happened in this bar is that there was another young woman who drank there. Her name was Debbie. We weren't friends because I'm not good at making friends. But what happened is one night, one of the two of us ended up with her head blown off in the vacant lot behind the building in which this bar was located. I don't know what kind of violence was in your drinking. This was not characteristic of mine, and it frightened me. And the other part of it that frightened me is that I'm like Debbie. When I drink, I become obnoxious, I guess. But what I feel is happening is that I'm getting important information about you. I don't know where I pick it up, but, you know, just channeling or something. And I need to let you know. And you may be having a conversation with someone, or maybe you're eating dinner, or maybe you're watching. And I just insert myself in that inappropriate way, and it annoys people. And what I realized is that could have been me. And this is when I became afraid of my drinking. This is when I started to try to control my drinking. And this is when I found out that I could not stop drinking. I did with myself what I did with anybody who tried to control my drinking. I just started drinking behind my own back now instead of yours, you know. And it's kind of a funny way to say it, but it is not a funny experience. You know, I've had things happen to me as an alcoholic woman. I have been out of control of myself physically. I have been out of control of my environment. I have been unaware of the people that I have attached myself to for the evening at some point. And those are terrible things. But to not be able to determine what's going to happen next in my own life, to no longer be able to choose the right of choice, that's the difference between man and animal, is it not? And I recognized I had crossed some line there, that something happened to me I couldn't even talk about or articulate, but it terrified me. And it felt to me like my life began to go on without my permission. And what began to happen is that the obsession to drink would determine my day. Simply that. It is that thing in the book, King Alcohol. I no longer called the shots. If I knew I had or thought I had, it was clear to me now that I did not. And a couple of things happened that propelled me into Alcoholics Anonymous. First of all, I was burglarized. Now, I don't know why that mattered, but I burglarized, and I was burglarized and I didn't notice for a couple weeks. I mean, come on, you know, who lives like that? And it was some hallmark to me that I was just, my life, I was so out of control of my life. And I began to get this spiritual claustrophobia. We call it the bondage of self. You know, I hated my guts. And where do you go? You know, where do you go? I'm a person who takes geographics. And suicide is the quickest way out of town for some of us. And I killed myself a few times, but I am as unqualified at suicide as I am at living. You know, I remember, like, on a bad day, in California we have earthquakes, and so on a real bad day, I'd, like, park under a bridge, you know, just wait. Loser. And I knew that. And I had a particularly bad day another time, and I overdosed. But I mean, it was like no dose, you know. So we're still waiting. And so it was just this terrible. How do you get out of this thing? And so another thing that happened that really got my attention was I was looking out of the window of the place where I was living one day, and I happened to notice a guy walking down the street with a shotgun. I'm from Montana. I know a shotgun when I see one. And I thought that was pretty out there. I mean, I don't know if they're doing that in Atlanta these days, but they weren't doing that in Los Angeles even then. And it's an interesting thing. It's one of those things. I have been given the privilege of living to the other side of myself. I have had the opportunity to look back at certain things in my life. And these things have made me think, and you do not have to think this if you're new, that there is something trying to help. Because if I had not looked out the window and seen this person, when he crossed the street, came into the courtyard of the building where I lived, and up the stairs to my door, I would have opened the door to this shotgun. But as it was, I had seen him. And I didn't really know what to do. Maybe you've been in situations like that when you were drinking, too. I didn't know what to do. I was very quiet, obviously. And I felt I was trying. I'd never seen this person before, as far as I could tell. I must have done something to him in a blackout. Maybe it was the people I lived with. That's what he was doing at the door. Because I lived with people like that at that point. And I'm going to tell you, they would have said the same thing about me, and it would have been true. But my mind was racing, and I didn't know what to do. And I just stood there. And maybe there was too much commotion in the courtyard for him to kick the door in or shoot it down, or I don't know. But eventually, and it felt like a lot longer than eventually, it felt like that minute before you drink, when you're trying not to drink. It's a second, actually, isn't it? A second. And it lasts like 1,000 years when you try to say, I won't do it this time. I'm not doing it this time. I will not do it. That you made a promise or you went to a place where it wouldn't happen and it's happening and it's happening and it happens. And it felt long like that. And for some reason, he just turned around. I heard him turn around and go down the steps and walk away. And in my case, this was the moment when I really wanted help. I wanted help. I am unfortunately a person that you are not so, I'm not so easily helped. I don't ask for it. It's this alcoholic pride we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. I reached a point in my sobriety where you said to me, you want to be right, Sia, or you want to live? And you know, I found out I wanted to live. But I did not have that kind of language that day. And so I didn't ask for help. You know, growing up in an alcoholic home, one thing that Bill Wilson says about children from alcoholic homes, he says we're pathetically cynical. That is a precursor to that thing about there is one thing that is a bar against all information, etc. You know, contempt prior to investigation. I think I had that at a very early age. And I'm a person like this. I got to this place in myself where it was like, I don't care if you have that little collar around your neck. And I don't care if you got a badge and a gun. And I don't care if you got a thing on the wall that says you're really smart about something. Because you know what I know about you? Right down at the bottom of it all, you're just another lousy human being, just like me. You can't help somebody like that, you know. And so I was somewhere shortly thereafter, leafing through a newspaper, basically waiting for the obsession of the mind to hit. And, you know, I have the two features of alcoholism that we talk about in AA. It's described in many ways, but the hallmarks for me are allergy of the body and obsession of the mind. And I have an allergy to alcohol. I have other allergies, too, though. You know, I have an allergy to penicillin. And here's what I absolutely know, standing here tonight, that I am never scoring a shot of penicillin again in this lifetime. It ain't happening unless there's some misunderstanding on the part of the medical community somewhere. But the other thing that I absolutely know, standing here tonight fully sober with 35 years and change, is I absolutely will drink again without Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is because of the second feature of alcoholism, obsession of the mind. My alcoholism is still here. It's just not drunk. You know, it's that little sentence, and there's many, but the one that struck me one day is the problem centers in the mind. And that really gave me pause. That ain't located in a bottle. That's not in the past. That's now. That's today. And that's why I'm grateful that you invite me. You know, I'm not afraid of alcoholism. I'm in AA, but I respect it. I respect it as much as I respect Alcoholics Anonymous. It still takes people out that I love, people that come here, people that I don't understand why they didn't get it. I kind of don't understand why I did get it. I did do the things. It's a spiritual principle. But I have, I think, been given a spiritual awakening to not be arrogant and think I wised up or something, you know. And it's grace. It's grace. I believe that, and you don't have to if you're new. I was leafing through this newspaper, and I ran across Alcoholics Anonymous in the community service section. It said something about Alcoholics Anonymous, that we hold hands here and we pray. and then we don't drink anymore. And I'm telling you, that part of me, just that cynical part, thought that was corny as hell. But then there was this other thing in me, this other voice, I guess, that spoke, and it felt like for the first time, and it said, I want to go. There was something in me that wanted to live. Mm-hmm. And so I went to this meeting, and it was a daytime meeting, and I think it was a nice meeting. There was a woman who greeted me at the door, is why I say that. She gave me her phone number. She said she would be happy to sponsor me. And I went into the meeting. Now, I came to that meeting for help. And this is what I'm up against with my own alcoholism. I came there for help. I couldn't stop drinking. I had people coming to my door now with shotguns. I had a lot of problems, and I was aware that I had those problems. Came to the meeting for help, made the mistake of going and sitting in the front of the room, and I got this attack of self-centered fear, just like in kindergarten. And now all I want to do is get the hell out of there, pardon my French. But I'm sitting in the front of the meeting, and I'm too embarrassed to get up and leave. And so I sit in that meeting doing that thing where you just can't wait to get out of where you are. And when the meeting is over, I got out of there. And I didn't have your book. I didn't know your damn traditions. I didn't know your steps. And I was never going to call that lady again. How did that happen? That self-will run riot. And I felt like I made a clean getaway from the only thing that actually has proven helpful to me in my entire life. And about, I don't know, it felt like an hour later or something, this weird thing happened. And what happened is that thing, that obsession of the mind that you cannot pay away, pray away, run away from, talk your way out of, deal another card to, that thing that you cannot get away from, that was gone. It was gone, and I noticed this. And I felt I was given a moment of grace, you know, where a ray of sun shines through the clouds, just a moment of clarity, a moment of sanity where I did not take credit for this, where I did not say to myself that I'd had enough to drink, that I'd had my fair share, that I had wised up. None of that happened. I thought about the people in church, actually, when I was a kid, and I thought, well, maybe this is what they were talking about when they talked about God. I had never felt anything in church. I'm a person who needs a spiritual experience. I needed something I didn't get there, and it's not the church's fault. Alcoholism is something that seems to filter it out. It filters love out. It filters hope out. It's an inside job, just like Alcoholics Anonymous. It rips you up from the inside out. And I had this moment where I thought about that, and I thought, you know, I needed help, and I came here, and something helped me. And I was incredibly grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. But here's the problem that I had. The problem that I had is I thought I had a drinking problem. And my problem was solved, as far as I could see. I had not engaged with you. I did not know that alcoholism isn't a euphemism for drinking too much. And if you're here and you have a drinking problem, Alcoholics Anonymous will certainly work for that. But I had this other thing, which I did not realize, which I have underestimated even in sobriety. It is progressive. It is fatal. It is incurable without something. And Alcoholics Anonymous astonishes me in a lot of ways. I don't know about you. It is a weird thing to say to you, but I think this is true. I do not know any other fatal illness where the treatment makes you glad to have the illness. I do not think people with cancer are glad to have cancer when they get chemotherapy. I do not think people getting chemotherapy laugh. You know, and we laugh. And it's just this amazing thing that caught me so off guard. And it grasped and developed me, I think, ultimately. But anyway, I did not understand this. I thought my problem was solved. I was very grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said to myself, if something comes up, I'll be right back. And alcoholism said, no problem. And about 2 weeks later, something came up all right. And it is covered to some extent in the big book. It is the spiritual malady that we have, the part that couples with the drinking and makes an unbeatable combo plate for somebody like me, except for Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to what we call in AA a slippery place, and I met a person I had a bad history with, and it did not go well. And I got very angry about it. And my anger is bigger than I am. Anger is a false power in my case. You know, I'm a powerless person. I come to AA. If you're new, maybe that's hard to understand. But I seek power because I lack it. And it puffs me up. And it makes me do a lot of wrong things. And that day I got so angry at this person. And I think they were fine. But I was not. I drank again. And then I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted that thing to happen that happened in that first meeting. And it didn't happen. And where do you get it? You know what I mean? What are you supposed to do? And I didn't have your book. And there's something in the book, it talks about we have a spiritual experience of the educational variety also. And that has been the kind that I have had in this sobriety, where one comes and we do put up the chairs, and we do shake other people's hand, and we do say hello. And as the Pacific Group says, you don't have to care if the other newcomers live or die. Just shake their hand. Alcoholics Anonymous will work for you. And that's preposterous. But when one is desperate, preposterous seems to start being a lot more palatable. And so I didn't know what to do. I came back to a few more meetings. I didn't hook up with people. And I drifted out the door, right into my alcoholism's arms. And I was out there for a long time, felt like a real long time. I was out there for 7 years, and it got worse. I ended up in London, and I was modeling in London. That's what I called it. I don't know what you'd have called it if you'd seen it. funny to you. what happened in London is I showed up for a job. I had been out all night, like I like to do, and I looked terrible. And for some reason, they went ahead and took the pictures for this job, and they got the pictures back. And I saw these pictures too, and you know what I looked like? I looked like an alcoholic. My face was bloated. My eyes were bloodshot. A little hard to cover that up with makeup, you know. And not a vision for you, haha, right? And the client was angry. And they called my agency. And I don't know about you guys, but I am not a functioning alcoholic. I don't think I am. I don't do well. You know, I'm in the I can't club is what I am. Out there, I can't doesn't work that great. You can't make the car payment. I don't know about you guys. They take the car. You can't show up for work too many times, or you say you have a bad day too many times, like I said with my modeling agency. I got fired. I don't know about you. You know, I had had more than one bad day than this job with Oil of Olay. I had walked down runways with my dresses on backwards. I walked out of my shoes, you know, and they get sick of it, right? And they're like, get out of here. And you don't show up for the family out there. I don't know about you, but they file. You know, and I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're new, and I'm no different here. No different. I turned to somebody and said, I can't stop drinking. And they said, I can't either. And that's the thing. The life-saving thing for me is, where did you say it, Sia? I said it here. There's a solution here. And so I just, that's where it got to. And I lost my job. And there's something in the book. It says, God is everything or God's nothing. And for a person like me, you know when God's everything? And there's nobody else to call. And there had been a woman in that business who broke her anonymity. I called her up, and I went back to AA, and it went a little better. But I had not really surrendered my will. I didn't know that at the time, but I'm telling you that in retrospect. I had a sort of a shopping list for Alcoholics Anonymous, things I expected back in a certain frame of time. And they did not deliver. And you know, I don't know about you either, but I'm like a resentment machine. I am a problem factory without enough program. You know that part in the book that says resentment is the number one offender? It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. It says something like that. I'm paraphrasing. If that's not true, it should come out of the book because that's quite it's the number one offender. It's a high number, don't you think? I am the poster child for that. That's what happened in my first sobriety, and then this is what happened in this second sobriety. I got mad at Alcoholics Anonymous. You didn't come through, as far as I was concerned. And so then there's another thing the book says. There's one who has all power. May you find him now. And that day, his name was Gerald. me and Gerald went to Gatwick Airport, and the reason that Gerald was in my life is he was going to buy tickets and get us out of the country. And a geographic is a big thing for me. I want to get out of here. And what I don't understand is, you can't get out of here, Sia. Here is here. You know, it's like when I came into AA in this sobriety, and I was still so bitter. And I would sit there while the program was working on me, and I would think things like, you know, I wouldn't have to be with these losers if I had gotten a Vogue cover, is what I said to myself. And I looked around the rooms where I go to meetings, and there's models in there that have been on the cover of Vogue. And that kind of, I was like, well, what are they doing here, you know? And when I came into AA this time, my mother gave me a car that was not being used in my family. Well, it wasn't a cool car. It was a crummy car to me. And then I felt like if I had a cool car, I wouldn't feel so bad, and I wouldn't have to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. At the meetings that I go to in Los Angeles, there's cool cars that people drive in those meetings. And so I thought, well, what are they doing here, you know? And I said to myself, if I had been loved, if somebody had cared about me, I wouldn't have to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I looked in the meetings there, and there were people who had marriages and people who had come from loving homes. What are they doing there, you know? And it backed me up against a wall. What is wrong with me? And the problem is here. It is here. And this program is for me. So I was at the airport with Gerald, and a weird thing happened. A thing like the shotgun thing, where I feel something interceded on my behalf. I don't know what you did to try to stop drinking. I got to a point where I thought one day, you know, I'm just going to do something wrong, and I'm going to end up in jail, because they make you stop drinking in jail, you know? And I thought it through a little bit, and I realized nobody can really make you stop drinking if you can't stop drinking. So I guess what's basically happening in jail is they're just, like, interrupting you or something. And, you know, it's rude. And so, you know, that was off the table for me. But I was standing in line here waiting for Gerald, and out of nowhere, my little geographic got interrupted because these federales came swooping down out of nowhere, and they arrested Gerald. They handcuffed Gerald, and they arrested the tickets, which was more upsetting to me, you know. And, you know, it's that thing in the book, take a trip, not take a trip. And I didn't have enough program for not take a trip. And I did what I do. You can set your watch to it. I blew my sobriety. And, you know, then I did something that I didn't understand. Then I did something that wasn't characteristic of me. And that something was I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't understand why I did that. I mean, I thought I was mad at you. And I can get mad at people with the best of them. My own anger can frighten me. Without program, it's a scary thing to me. And I wanted to understand that. I wanted to know what, you know. And I studied that, and I studied that. And then one day, I got it. I got it. And it's the most fundamental thing of Alcoholics Anonymous. To me, it is the first intangible action. This is a spiritual program, and in my case, it is hard to get my head around that. I can't see some of these things, you know. But the first intangible action is this thing of identification that I've come to understand is the fundament of my survival. It is that I don't know what meeting it was. I can't tell you what speaker it was or what person talking to me it was. But somewhere along the line, to me, there is a second invisible line. It is the deal of being out there and being in here, being separate and being with. And somewhere along the line, I identified in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that had never happened to me. That word, what it means to me, had never happened to me in my life. And Alcoholics Anonymous became my home. And I was in trouble that day. I knew I was in trouble that day because I went back to something that doesn't work for me. And I could not stop myself from going back to drinking. And so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because you told me you were like me. You told me you could not stop drinking. You talked openly about what you used to be like, and you weren't like that now. And I wanted what you had. That's what happened to me. And so I started my sobriety over there. And there was a man in this meeting when I went back who I had not seen before. So I was more forthcoming with him than I might normally be. Because basically I'm a big fat liar, pants on fire, you know. And I'm not going to tell the truth. I remember one of the meetings I went to in London. I was going on and on about myself, which was my favorite topic, I guess. And this woman just said, you know what, shut up. She actually said that. She said, you know, I'm going to tell you, if you're an alcoholic, I already know about you anyway, all about you. I know that you're a liar, a cheat, a thief, and a whore, okay? She said, but go in the meeting because you'll be sitting between a liar and a cheat, behind a thief, and in front of another whore. Thanks, lady, right? But she was right. She was right. And I've never forgotten it, so that was the right thing to say to me that day. So this guy listened to me politely for a few minutes, got the picture quickly, wrote a phone number down, and he said, you know, Sia, if you got 6 months of your life to give, why don't you work this program as Bill sees it and not as Sia sees it? And he wasn't being a wise guy. He just quietly said that, gave me the number, walked away. And now I guess I'm standing at the turning point, you know, the thing and how it works. And I'm either going to ask God's protection and care with complete abandon, or the unsaid thing is I ain't. And, you know, I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time now. And I have stood with people in that moment and given them my phone number because you gave me yours. And I said to them, you know, if I can help you out, give me a call, because I'd love to do that, because that's what AA did for me. And sometimes these people say to me that they can't. And here's what I know, because I have been with you, people who work an honest program, people who taught me what these words really mean. And what I know is that's not the truth. The real truth is, the real word to use is, you won't. And that's a life or death difference. My experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is simply this. We take steps here. But the next step is always something I can do. Maybe it's a tiny little thing, but it's doable for me. And that's my choice, you know. I can dial the phone. Do you know what I mean? I can go to the airport, get on an airplane, and come here and tell you what you did for me. Those things I can do. But there's a division of labor in Alcoholics Anonymous I have come to find, where there's certain things that I can do, and you can help me do. But then this other thing, what does it say? Wherever two or more gathered, what? There's coffee? No. Right? No. It says, there he is in our midst. And if you're new, it can be he or she or it. But the point is this. If it's coffee, like I had a coffee commitment, if it's the number of coffees I'm going to serve that's going to keep me sober, if I'm going to keep me sober, if that's the arithmetic here, then I guess some barista at a Starbucks someplace is like a warm-up act for the Dalai Lama. Do you know what I mean? That is not what is happening here. There is something else here. And so I dialed the phone. Because there was no other offer on the table. And that felt really bad, I'm going to tell you. But it was a building block for my sobriety. And it was necessary for a person like me. I dialed the phone, and it was a hell of a 12-step call. It's something when I read the doctor's opinion that I think of. Because this is a total stranger that I called. That is not typical for me. And I was calling for help. That is not typical for me. I need things to be stacked against me for me to become open-minded. And the thing with Dr. Silkworth, if you're new, Dr. Silkworth was a benefactor of Alcoholics Anonymous. He treated us person after person after person. And these are in the days that I can read about, but I don't know how it felt. They're so far gone, these folks. There's no hope, you know. And I never heard a story of him saying, it's too late for you. You know, why don't you, could you just step aside? Let me try to help somebody who's got a chance. I don't think he ever said that. And this one person that he treated who should never have made it, who we all would have probably bet against, maybe like a lot of people in this room, I would not have bet on myself. This guy came back to thank Silkworth. And in the doctor's opinion, Silkworth said something like, he felt like he'd never met this person before. He didn't recognize him. And I thought about that, because I've had occasion to think in leisure in my sobriety. And this is a physician. You know, that's an intimate interaction. When a doctor takes your pulse, they touch you. When they listen to your heart, they're right there. And he couldn't recognize this guy. And what he said is, but one thing that the guy's voice was vaguely familiar, something like that, vaguely familiar. But now his voice was brimming over with self-confidence. And that is exactly what this phone call was, this total stranger. There was something in his voice. There was something he had found in Alcoholics Anonymous that I had not been able to find yet. There was a way that he put it together for me that made me want what he had, that made me understand there's some way to go here, and I can't find it alone. You know, and that is why I have a sponsor today, because I have alcoholism. And sometimes I can't see, and sometimes I don't know. Excuse me. And so basically, I just got on a plane, and I went to Los Angeles. It was a geographic, I'm going to tell you that. But I went to the place where there's an answer. And I got sober in the Pacific group, one alcoholic yelling at another. Excuse me. And I was given, I've been talking for an hour, so I could take 10 more minutes, I guess. Sure. You guys okay with that? Okay, because I want to tell you about my first meeting. I went there. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Sorry.
They have a big meeting on Wednesday night, and they were very nice to me. They gave me a place to live, and they gave me rides to meetings because I hadn't gotten the crummy car from my mom yet, you know. And so I went to that Wednesday meeting, and there's about 600 people to 1,000 people that go to that meeting. And yeah, that's what I thought. And I went in that meeting, and it was like kindergarten all over again. I got this attack of self-centered fear. They didn't look like alcoholics. You don't look like alcoholics. I had come such a long way, and suddenly, just like that first meeting, it was over, man. I just wanted out of there. I thought this is not going to work, and the guy that had given me a ride kind of noticed I was having a little psychotic episode, you know? And he said to me, you know, Sia, you're already here. You might as well stay till the end of the meeting. And I felt so screwed, pardon my language, because he had the keys, okay? So that's easy for him to say, you know? And so I went in the meeting, and I sat there, just like that first meeting, just doing this, you know? And I was tuned out. I was so scared. I didn't. And at the end of the meeting, I made a beeline for the exit, and this guy intercepted me, and he said to me, how would you like a coffee commitment? And I felt like saying to that guy, how'd you like me to kick your ass? I wouldn't have said it. I'm too much of a chicken, but, you know, I just, oh, God. And instead, what I said to him, because I'm a big, fat liar, is I couldn't take the coffee commitment because I was only going to be there 2 weeks. And what I would have loved to ask that person who I was that night, where are you going, Sia? Where? Where you got left to go? At that point in my sobriety, or my life, here's what my resume looked like. At that point, I had been uninvited to one entire country. Thank you very much. I'd lost my job, as I mentioned. My family had disowned me for my behavior. I had a few problems going on. The thing that bothered me the most, or stuck in my craw, however you want to say it, was the fact that I happened to be married to two people at the same time. You know, and I had tried to treat it like an accounting problem. You know, like you... And the people involved just weren't going for it. You know, like, what do you mean you lost count? It's not a high number. 1, 2, you know. And I basically, I had no explanation for myself anymore. I couldn't put one over on you. I could not put one over on me. You know, I was just lost. And with all of that going on, I'm leaving, you know. And this guy saved my life. He did the simplest thing. He said to me, okay, we'll just take it for 2 weeks. And you know what? I just couldn't come up with a lie fast enough. And so I got stuck with this coffee commitment is how it felt. And here's the thing that was. It's another, to me, spiritual transaction that I did not understand that it's Alcoholics Anonymous. It is, for me, the unicorn of my recovery. It is the thing I safeguard with everything I have. $100 word. It makes me the location for a miracle, I think. And it is that word, surrender. Mm-hmm. I feel that meeting and the recovery, just like this group, it overwhelmed my alcoholism. And I just couldn't go out there and do it one more time. I just couldn't do it. So that's what it was. And all those things that I had against me, here's what it is for me. You know, I got a busted windshield. It's like if you drive down the street in a car with a busted windshield, everything you look at it through that windshield looks busted. The trees look busted. The sky looks busted. People look busted. But nothing's busted except the windshield. And my windshield is busted. And Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my point of view, my outlook on life. We were talking about Chuck C. Chuck C., well-loved member, talked about a new pair of glasses. And I think what you've done for me is you've given me a pair of God's glasses. And if you're new here, and the word God is difficult for you, I had a problem with that based on my experience with religion as a kid. But it ain't what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. It's about a higher power. And what Alcoholics Anonymous said to me, and I will close with this. Alcoholics Anonymous said to me, you know, it's a placeholder word, Sia. It's simply something that helps. Do you need help? And did we ever have a problem with the label on the bottle and the power you found in that bottle? No, we did not. And we do not have a problem with the label on your higher power. We don't care what you call it. We just want you to find something besides you to rely on. Self-reliance fails us. And so with all of that, I had that surrender. And the only thing I can equate that to, because I like to try to understand these things, is that one time I was drowning. Now, I'm an excellent swimmer, and I got in a situation where I underestimated the situation, just like alcoholism, and I was drowning. And you know, the body doesn't ask for permission to live. It just fights. It wants to live. You know, it fights, it fights, it fights, it fights. And then there's nothing left eventually, and you just drift. I just drifted wherever I was going to end up. And this weird thing happened out of nowhere. There was something to stand on. I got my head out of water. I could breathe. And I lived. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is, this unexpected miracle in my life. And I appreciate being able to come and thank you and tell you. Thank you.